You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Hello and welcome to the Breakfast Table Podcast, brought to you by the 8-Bit Waffles team.
My name is Darshan.
My name is Ferris.
And I'm your host, Brad, and joining us today is Devin, all the way from the Knockout and Three Counts podcast.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Good to be here.
Yep, and we're here to talk about Black Panther, which is recently released in theaters, and a little bit about diversity in comics as well. So let's jump right into it with Black Panther. So, Ferris, for all the people on the podcast, you have been raving about this movie for, I think, the last four or five podcasts?
At least.
At least. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts on it?
As from an outsider looking in, because I'm not, like, I'll admit this now, I'm not that big of a Marvel fan. I really just kind of go for a lot of the Marvel movies because it's like, these are going to be superhero movies done right. They're going to be done very well, cinematics and all that niceness. I enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed it because, like, it's one of the movies that I saw a lot of top-billed African-American cast members, like, example, Angela Bassett as T'Challa's mother, Lupita Nyong'o as his love interest, Forest Whitaker as, I'm going to just call him the dude, but he was the garden caretaker, let's say him. And then also Michael Jordan, not the one that plays on the Bulls, though, Michael B. Jordan, as the bad guy Killmonger. So, yeah, like, I was really excited for all the different roles that we got in it. So, yeah, it was a good one. It's possibly the best Black Panther movie we could have ever gotten.
Yeah, I think I actually told you that as the movie ended. Like, with Deadpool, you ended that movie going, this is the best we could have gotten for Deadpool on the big screen. Right. With Black Panther, this is the best way they could have introed Black Panther into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, coming from the comic books and everything. Because, yeah, there were some decisions made in the movie that we're going to go into spoilers with this one. Let's just straight up.
Spoiler alert, guys.
I don't think there's a way we can talk about this movie without going into the spoilers, since a lot of the plot was hidden from the trailers for the most part. Mm-hmm. But with the way that they handled the villains, I loved Killmonger. Mm-hmm. I thought he was a great foil to Black Panther throughout the entire movie. But then you had Claw in there, and then you had, I can't remember what they actually called him in the movie, but it was Manape.
M'Baku.
M'Baku?
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, M'Baku was only in a couple parts of it. His entire role in the movie, I feel like, could have possibly been removed for the most part, except for toward the end. But I would have liked to see him save for a later movie. And then they found, like, another tribe to do the work that he did in this movie. And then with Claw, they completely wasted his character, I think. 100%.
You think so?
I think so. Because he was good during the beginning.
Right.
And then they killed him off.
I felt like with Claw, it was more of a, okay, here's what you're expecting. You're expecting it to be, you know, the black man versus the white man. You know, Claw's going to be the main villain in the movie. And, you know, Killmonger's going to be like his underling. But it kind of swerved everybody. Because we're doing spoilers. As soon as he was killed in the movie, I'm like, oh God, where does this go next? So for me, I welcomed it because it basically, I had no idea that they were going to go this route with that.
Mm-hmm. See, I would have just liked to see Claw in future iterations because Claw is a huge villain for Black Panther.
I agree.
So for them to kill him off in the first movie, it would be kind of like the first Batman movie, they kill off the Joker. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. You just killed off the big adversary that everything usually leads to.
True. But and then the problem too is I thought Killmonger was a great villain in this one too. But now he's gone too, so where do you go from here? But I think going all out for this first one, Claude basically played the role of setting everything up and Killmonger just knocked it out of the park, I think Eric Killmonger might be probably behind Loki, the best villain I've seen in any Marvel cinematic film so far.
See, I wouldn't put him up that high, but I definitely did like him as a villain. I
liked him from his, like, argumentative value standpoint like his values and what he believed in and why he wanted to do this. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated that in a villain more than compared to other Marvel movies. I thought the build up and the background behind Killmonger was so good that you don't really see that in typical villains in other Marvel Cinematic Universe types of movies. It's right. just the background and like his argumentativeness with like, you know, here's some technology we should be helping our people with that, mm-hmm. you know, elsewhere in the world, not just here in Wakanda, like, why aren't we doing this? You know, right. it made me almost feel his side, even though he was the bad guy. And that's what I definitely liked about him more than other, you know, bad guys that I see in other movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he definitely had the good villain aspect of you could change the direction the movie is going by just following the villain and making him seem like the hero. You could have totally flipped this movie and made it seem like Killmonger was the hero and Black Panther was the villain.
Exactly. And I think that's the mark of a great villain. Basically, the villain, a great villain, and this was one of the big problems with the Justice League film. You couldn't really follow what the villain's motive was. If you can't understand why the villain is doing what they're doing, if the villain doesn't think what they're doing is the right thing to do, then why are you following it? But not only does he let you know that what he's doing, he believes is right, you start to believe it too. So mm-hmm. that's why I feel like Killmonger is one of the best villains that they've had in the Marvel Cinematic Universe so far.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that he's the exact opposite of Black Panther in mind mentality, because in the beginning of the movie, he wants to do the same thing his father did and kind of run the country and continue keeping everything inside Wakanda and not really sharing any knowledge with the rest of the world.
Right.
And then throughout the movie, he starts to kind of go, maybe we should start sharing things. And then you have the person with the complete opposite mindset going, no, we don't need to share everything. We need to start giving it to people and taking the world back.
Yeah, we need to take the world over.
Yeah, we need to use this to, you know, throw it into the faces of the world and show them that we're a power.
Exactly.
And so you had those two completely different mindsets, and then you saw Black Panther throughout the movie. This was probably the best thing about his character development in the movie, is it wasn't just him going, oh, you were right, we should probably do something. It was throughout the movie he was getting these little hints and everything that we should start going out into the world a little bit more, especially when like Ross comes in and he's like, how did you guys have all of this and we didn't know any of it?
Right.
You know, throughout the movie where you guys have hover cart? Wait a minute, what? You know,
yeah, his girlfriend, his ex-girlfriend kind of started saying the same thing, like, we need to be doing more. So yeah, like you're saying, it's bits and pieces of it coming to him, like, hey, maybe I should be doing more as the king now. So I see what your point is.
Yeah, it wasn't, because that's one thing that character development, just people go, oh yeah, he came to a revelation at the very end on a snap judgment,
right.
And that's character. No, it's not. This is how you do character development, where you show the progress throughout the movie of mm-hmm. them making that decision at the end, where he then goes, you know, to the council and kind of says, we're going to be sharing our knowledge now. We're no longer going to be an internal company or country. And the best part of that is where I can't remember what country it was that spoke up and was like, so what's a country of farmers got to share with the rest of the world?
Right.
And you just see that smile. It's like, this is going to go places. This is going to be great. I want to see the next Black Panther movie just to see where this plot goes now.
Well, are they going to do another one? Because it's not official yet. But
I mean, come on. It made this much money. You don't think it's going to make another one? You kidding me?
Hey, I don't believe stuff until it's official, man.
We'll see what happens in, Infinity Wars and how that plays out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because right now the only movie confirmed past Avengers 4 is a Spider-Man movie. They haven't confirmed anything else beyond
Captain Marvel, I think, is a – yeah, they're shooting that right now. Captain Marvel's there, they're shooting that, and then
– that's before Avengers 4.
Okay. You're right.
I'm saying past Avengers 4, they don't have anything announced except for Spider-Man Homecoming 2, which I don't even know if Marvel wanted that to be announced. That was Sony that announced that one.
That kind of slipped out when they were talking.
Yeah.
In the interviewing. That there's a screenplay being written for it.
Yeah, because right now, for the weekend, Black Panther is sitting at $192 million. And I think that's domestic. Yeah, that's domestic only.
I think it's like 361 worldwide.
Yeah.
I think that's the number I heard.
Yeah, 361 worldwide right now.
You know, I hate to be that guy, but this is probably the only movie that this many black people have gone out to see. Normally, they pirate the crap out of it. This is the first time I've seen people, like, and I've seen it obviously with Harry Potter, and I've seen it with, like, different Marvel movies and stuff like that. But, like, Black Panther is probably one of the first movies I've seen with a lot of people being so eccentric about it and so excited, like, dressing up with it, showing performances and stuff like that. And it's really exciting to see. It's definitely something to, like, this is something that we need with a lot of superhero movies of someone actually dressing up.
Is Black Panther brought to theaters like Obama on Election Day?
Yes. Yes.
You know, it's 100%. Funny you say that. I have a friend. He didn't really understand it. Like, that's basically how I got to know you guys. I asked you, like, hey, how much do you think this movie's going to make the first weekend?
Because So a little background on our listeners here. That's how we met Devin.
Yeah.
We're at a networking group from Podcast Detroit. It's to meet other fellow podcasters on their shows. Mm-hmm. And we were having a conversation about a personal bet that Devin put on with a friend. Right. On how much money this movie is going to make opening weekend.
He's not a comic book fan like that. So he just didn't understand, like, what do you mean? Like, white folks are going to go see an all-black movie. It's not going to happen. And then black
what
folks
are
going
to... What is Tyler Perry for $200?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, dude, it's Marvel. It's going to make money regardless. And then it's a black king. Like, it's going to make money. He was like, man, I bet you don't make more than $85 million the first weekend. I'm like, I will take that bet, sir.
Yeah. So, those two took a bet, and obviously you're going to win in this instance.
Oh, but man.
It got us sparking on an awesome conversation about the background of Marvel, diversity, the ticket reservations that were put into place before the movie came out. It beat out, Civil War? Right.
Yeah, Civil War.
If we were talking about if it was going to beat up the sales for Civil War, like,
which
because
it did.
which it clearly did, and you know how would that what would that mean for the Marvel Cinematic Universe? You know, not only domestically but internationally and from a diversity standpoint as well. Mm-hmm. We were just like talking here and there about everything related to it. You know, it was a really cool way to meet somebody. So.
I'm just waiting for my free T-shirt. That's all I'm.
I mean, you should have made the bet at $200 million because it is currently on point to make $220 million by the end of the weekend.
I believe it. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So
and that's more than any Marvel film, right? I think.
Let me see.
There's no way it beat Avengers.
I think Avengers was 207.
It probably beat opening weekend sales. Then
I think opening weekend. Yeah, I think it was 207 for.
Because I was going to say, like, there's too many people I knew who saw Avengers like four times. Like, it's like everyone I knew did it.
How many times do you think black people have seen? I literally tried to go see Black Panther before I came here
to be get like a real
me too
and, with my movie pass, and it was like,
do you know they updated the movie pass app? Actually, speaking
did
of,
they?
Yeah, they updated.
Yeah, they updated. It was funny, on Valentine's it went down, so it wasn't working. So all those couples that went out on Valentine's Day to use MoviePass.
Like, I got to put some money down.
I wasn't expecting this.
This ain't going to be a cheap date anymore.
It updated in a, also MoviePass, if you're listening, please don't yell at us for what I'm about to say. It updated in a great way and also a bad way. Because when I first used it, the first thing I saw was like MJR, which is a local theater, not available. And I was like, what? Did MJR drop? Like, that's what I was afraid of, but it was just, it kept showing me all the 3D and all that. And it's just like, why is that in there if you don't
see
it?
You got an iPhone? You got an iPhone?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the OS, app update is for iPhone only currently, not Android yet.
Yeah, like it just.
I noticed too that if you do an e-ticket reservation on an iPhone, it gives you a warning before you make the ticket that you can't undo the reservation.
Yeah.
So once you choose it and you reserve it, that's it. You can't switch out of it like you used to.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting.
And thank you guys for putting me up on MoviePass, man. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We recommend that to everybody. It's among the first things we say. It's, hi, we're from 8-Bit Waffles. You should get MoviePass.
Yeah, it's because like we went from, like, I got side bet again on MoviePass. We went from, this isn't going to work. This is going to be a flash in the pan for maybe 2 months. And then all of us getting it like around the same window. James and Joanne taking a little bit longer than expected, but still like getting it around the same window. And we saw movies like every other day for almost 2 months straight. it was ridiculous. And it's like, there's no way that I'm able to see this many movies. Like, if I was doing this with my own money, I would have already gone bankrupt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's that moment where you go, this can't be legal, can it? This is legal? Oh, this is fun.
I believe in it so much, and it's like fool's gold to me, but I'm believing in it so hard that I'm buying stock in the company that owns MoviePass. It's called Helios Matheson. It's HMNY on the stock exchange. Mm-hmm. And they, I just bought a few shares, you know, a few weeks ago. Then they ended up diluting the stock because they needed to charge up more funding because too many people are using it. And it was worth like half its value after that. And I'm like an idiot. And I just ended up buying more. I was like, oh, it's cheaper now, so I might as well just buy more into it. It's like, oh, I'm saving money on movies anyway. So,
right.
You know, because it's like fool's gold. Either I'm a fool if I buy it, or it's going to be gold later on when I, you know, have this.
Yeah, because you told me, like, I don't know how long they can keep this going. So get it now.
Get it now and enjoy the ride. Yeah, because even when you go and see a movie, they'll now start sending you those kind of alerts going, hey, do this quick survey. And then one of the questions is always, would you have seen this movie if you didn't have MoviePass? I'm waiting for I wish that they put out those statistics because I want to know what the one for Black Panther is going to be. Because I guarantee that you're going to see like a weird little skew line in there of people going, I probably wouldn't have seen this if it wasn't for MoviePass because they're not big into comic book movies.
Right.
Because I'm trying to remember. Was
you're going
to
see like The Shape of Water, right? Or I, Tonya. Or those movies are like lesser known and they're like, you know, more independent. Mm-hmm. But they're driving people into the seats to be more enticed to watch them. I think The Shape of Water, 20% of all revenue was from MoviePass alone during that award season time.
But that's also one of those movies that people really don't know about as well. With mm-hmm. Black Panther, it's one that's being advertised. People know it exists.
Right.
And then they're going, oh, yeah, I have MoviePass. I'll go see this movie mm-hmm. that otherwise – I want to know what those numbers are. How many people were legitimately going
– the blockbuster percentage, not just the lower independent movie percentage.
I want to know that because this is the big blockbuster that's come out since MoviePass became huge.
Yeah, they have about 1.5 to 2 million subscribers now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's definitely up there. And the numbers show that people are going to see Black Panther.
Yeah.
You know, because it's up there to make 220 at the end of the weekend.
I liked how some people got into it. They wore their dashikis mm-hmm. out. A lot of African wear.
Oh, they had people like a whole excited. African dance team.
Yeah, Devin, talk about that.
Oh, man. Because ours was early screening on Thursday, so I bought my tickets back in August. So a company put this whole thing together. They basically rented out most of the theaters in the Imagine in Royal Oak. So, you know, we're just sitting there, you know, waiting for the show to start, and all of a sudden we start hearing these African drums. I'm like, what the hell is that? And then African dance, they did like a whole African dance routine. The crowd got into it, so I enjoyed it. It was a little bit much for me. You know, I wasn't expecting it, but, I mean, more power to them. I had a good time.
That's pretty cool.
What is it? When me and Brad and everyone else went, I was sitting here like, how many dashikis am I going to see? And I didn't see many when I walked in because when we actually got there, it was quite desolate because, you know, the whole idea of 7 p.m. showings just destroys every other showing to the point where it's not mm-hmm. as full.
Right.
But like, when we got there, I was like, oh, I don't see really any. And then when we see people get up, because obviously they've gotten comfortable, they're putting their jackets on, I saw like eight or so, and I was like, yes, thank you. Thank you for this. Like, I wanted to buy one for this, but you know how hard it is to get a dashiki?
Yeah.
Last second?
Like an authentic one?
At 6:30 on Thursday?
You literally got to get it shipped from Africa.
The only ones you could get are like the polyester ones that are like printed.
Just like a screen shirt.
Like a screen printed one, not like a real one.
Right. You know? But no, people had their hair wrapped up and everything. My people showed up, man. I'm proud of them.
Yeah. And not only that, but the movie had a lot of culture in it as well. They were sure to show all of that with the different tribes and the different kind of gowns and everything that they were wearing. And everything was very, I don't want to say authentic, but authentic.
Oh, it was.
I think that a lot of it had to do with the way that the director portrayed it. I think I don't know who the director
Ryan is. Ryan Coogler.
Okay. Oh, yeah, the guy that did Creed, right?
He did, he's only done three movies.
Yeah.
Fruitvale Station, Creed, and Black Panther.
So this two movies with Michael B. Jordan.
Three movies with Michael B. Jordan.
You're kidding me.
And he's got a fourth one with Michael B. Jordan.
All right.
Amazing direction. He, like you said, he incorporated a lot of cinematography of the landscape, as well as the city, the technology, the history, the culture. It's in there for sure.
Yeah. And even the end battle, I was telling Ferris this earlier, that was the most primitive, futuristic battle in cinema, I think.
The one thing I really enjoyed, like speaking to like the whole idea of like the culture and like what they pulled from it, like there's so many things that I was looking at just to see if I could pick it out and see if I could see it. Like I saw, you know, all kinds of different styles of Bantu knots. I saw, for one thing, Michael B. Jordan, he went through three different hairstyle changes in the movie, which a lot of people didn't catch. And he also had three different pairs of Timberlands on, which I'm also going to congratulate him on, because no one realistically should wear those for fashion because they're not comfortable.
They're not at all.
But like, it's just like, I love the way they did it. And like the one scene that actually kind of spoke volumes to me, like as like even like as an activist idea, is when like the first scene he was introduced, where he was in a museum looking at whatever, everyone pointed him out and like made it seem like he doesn't belong there.
Right.
And then like, he totally played on that. He was like, yeah, I don't belong here. And then he caused an issue. And it's just like, what? It's like, I like what you did there. I like that, because it's like, you tricked everyone, because you're like, everyone's going to think now he's actually just here looking, but he actually did cause the thing that people were thinking. And it's just like, what? You know? So I really enjoyed like the way they executed a lot of different things in that movie, especially with, was it the girl who played Michonne? She legitimately shaved her head for this.
Oh my God.
Yes.
They should just make a movie on her.
Yes.
They should make a comic on her. Oh my God. She was great. Yeah,
she'll be in Infinity War is not. Now I can see why, because she's a badass, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was fantastic.
Yeah.
Probably one of the best parts of the movie, too. She was supposed to be like a side character.
That car scene where she's like, they're shooting like guns and she comes out of the sunroof and just takes the vibranium spear.
No, not even the sunroof. She just climbs out the side window.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And just throws it in front of that car and just crashes it. It was just so badass.
I was listening to like some of the people's reactions of what was happening in theaters while they were watching a movie. And like the part where they were in like the weird like Korean dungeon.
Oh, yeah, the
room.
Gambling thing. Yeah.
And then like when she threw her wig at someone, like someone... Someone posted online that, like, when that happened, someone got up with their wig and started spinning it around.
I love my people.
It's so good. It's so good.
But one thing that I was trying to figure out, and I didn't think they were going to go this far African, quote unquote, with it. The guy that was basically a part of the little council had the lip plate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was authentic, yeah.
But one thing I was trying to figure out is basically they have like a secret code in their lips, right? So if they want to find out if you're from Wakanda, you show your lip, and then, you know, it shows up, oh yeah, you're Wakandan. So how does he prove that he's a Wakandan then?
He probably just doesn't leave. He probably legitimately can't leave. He can't go on any secret missions or anything because he has a disc in his lip.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, he was also the, I guess, the leader of that tribe.
Yeah, he's the royal tribal leader for that tribe.
So,
yeah.
It's not like somebody's going to go, I don't know if you're really who you say you are.
Maybe that's,
but there were more people, if you watch some of the background stuff, there was people that still had lip plates when they were walking through the town of Wakanda. There were people that had lip plates. So how do they prove that they're Wakandan?
Maybe that disc is vibranium or something. And that just
the disc is vibranium, or it's just like literally can only go in those specific people's mouths. Like literally you have to be from Wakanda and train in this to do it. Because isn't that that was the tribe that Lupita, she was from, right?
Was it?
In real life?
No, like not in real life. Like in the movie. Yeah. I believe that was her like tribe that she represented.
Maybe. I'm not sure.
I can't remember.
I don't recall that.
Because I'm remembering the coloring scheme because she was wearing form mainly green and he was also green. So I'm like,
yeah, it was like a pastel green thing going on.
But
yeah.
I can't remember for sure. I don't remember her like character's name. I just remember the actor, the actress's name.
Nakia.
Nakia, okay. Nokia.
There you go. So that's why she was indestructible.
Yes.
But yeah, and then you got the technology of Wakanda, which was the thing that I was most excited for, because Wakanda in the comics is always seen as a futuristic city. It's basically all of Marvel 2099 in one city in a regular universe.
Hidden.
And hidden away from everything else.
Exactly.
And so I was wondering what they were going to do with the technology and everything. So when they were showing off like the different Black Panther suits and she's like, oh yeah, and here's this necklace, go ahead and put that on, and then it just forms the suit around it. It's like, that's cool, I like that, you know. And
I
then
think her and Iron Man would get along so great.
Oh yeah,
Tony Stark,
her as a character was just so,
I think she'd put so like good.
So I know Tony Stark, I know, shame. Skipping a little bit, but I got a little bit of a theory, I might be wrong, but a lot of people think that in Infinity Wars, Iron Man's going to, well, Tony Stark's character is going to die, right?
I think they're all going to die.
Well,
that's just me, though.
But as far as Robert Downey Jr.'s, I think his contract is up. So they're probably going to have someone to take on the mantle of Iron Man after that.
Well, they might go with Rhiannon, the new girl.
But here's mm-hmm. what I'm thinking. The girl that takes over as Iron Man is Riri. What's her name? What's her last name?
Are you talking about Ironheart?
Ironheart, yeah.
Yeah.
Riri. Shuri. R-I. Riri. Could Shuri be the next Ironheart?
I have a feeling there would be
MIT though.
True, but yeah. you could go fully by the comic, or you could just borrow the idea from the comic and have Shuri become Ironheart.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they already killed Claw, so yeah. Might as well.
With Ironheart, though, that was a huge deal in the comics because they kind of killed off Tony and then brought her in like without no explanation or anything like right. that. And
I just feel like that, with her, if you put Shuri in that spot, you already have someone built in that I'm assuming that in Infinity Wars, they'll meet each other. There'll be a little bit of a rivalry between the two of them, and they'll probably get to know each other pretty well. So maybe Shuri becomes Ironheart.
Well, also with all this talk about potential change in roles from male to female roles, why don't we go over the diversity of comics and what we have in comics?
So, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump.
That was actually perfect, yeah.
Yeah, because with Ironheart taking over for Tony Stark, mm-hmm. that was a big deal. Like, that was the one that everybody complained about, mostly because it was just them going, yeah, we're going to get rid of Tony Stark, and now this person's the new Iron Man. And everybody's like, what? No, that's not how you do it. Because mm-hmm. even when Ms. Marvel changed to Camellia, I can't remember her last name right now, and she is of Muslim descent and everything like that. And people were like, oh, yeah, she's cool. She's a fan of the Avengers. She wants to be a part of the Avengers, and here she is taking on the role of Ms. Marvel now. She actually had a story that brought her up to that point.
Right.
And people were like, cool. Then you have Miles Morales. Again, people were like, oh, yeah, it's a younger Spider-Man kind of that watched Peter Parker die and had to take up that mantle and actually had a story going up to it. And people were like, I like this guy. Let's see more of him.
Right.
And then you have people like Ironheart where everybody's like, where did they come from? I don't know. Get rid of it. Bring me back Tony Stark.
Well, do you think it was the fact that it came out of nowhere or the fact that it's a woman taking over the Iron Man role?
It could be a little bit of both. I know from my perspective, I didn't like how they just went, oh, yeah, we had to get, you know, an African-American into this role. Let's cut out Tony Stark entirely, and then this is new. Let's not make this their own character. Let's go, this person's filling in now for Tony Stark. Because they did that before with James Rhodes. He was actually Iron Man for a good period of time.
Right.
And they did it flawlessly. Tony Stark wasn't able to do it. James was, so he took over the mantle. And the best part is, most people outside of you know, comic book readers, like in universe, most people didn't even know that Tony Stark was no longer Iron Man.
Okay,
because it was a full suit. Like, it took time before people were like, "You're not Tony Stark. I don't know who you are, but you're definitely not Tony Stark."
Right,
and you know, the kind of the point on that, like, Marvel, if I'm wrong here, correct me, but like, I want to say between like 2013 to about last year, we had a lot of changes in people's roles from like,
yeah, like Thor,
like a lot of people's changes in roles, either to be a feminine character or to be like a character of a different race. And a lot of it wasn't taken as, let's say, as kindheartedly as many would want. Like, example, like with, I think it was the Falcon becoming Captain America. If I am correct, yeah.
There was a lot of outrage, but the problem with that outrage is a lot of it is coming from people that don't read comics. Mm-hmm. And because comic book readers were looking at Captain Falcon becoming Captain Falcon instead of just the Falcon. Mm-hmm. And they were going, this is awesome. I like this.
Right.
You know, and then you had people on the outside going, what do you mean that Captain Falcon is now Captain America? This is you know, I don't approve of this whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Those aren't the people buying comics, though.
Right.
But then you have the times where comic book fans are going, I can't support. Like when the Hulk was Amadeus Cho. That was very negative from the comic book people mm-hmm. and outside of comic books.
Right.
Like, nobody approved of that one, it seemed. And so it's a different kind of thing. Like, there's a lot that comic book readers are going, shut up. You don't know. This is a good change. Mm-hmm. And then the ones where they're even going, what are you doing? Stop it. Just stop it.
Same thing with Captain America becoming a Hydra agent. Is that where that was a stop it?
That was definitely a stop it from. That was people in comics going, don't do that. And people outside comics going, I don't get it. What's the problem? What's a Hydra?
Man, so, as far as the movies go, do you think they're going to go with Falcon taking over for Captain America or for Steve Rogers, or do you think they're going to go Winter Soldier?
I hope that they go with Winter Soldier, but if they went with Falcon as it, I wouldn't have a problem with that. I think he would do a good job taking up the Captain America role as they've kind of grown him into the universe.
Right.
But at the same time, I would love for them to put Bucky Barnes into that position, because Bucky Barnes' Captain America were some of the greatest comics for Captain America for a short period of time. Because Captain America kind of died down in comics for a while, where his stories were getting very, I'm going to say, bad. and then they killed him off, and then Bucky took over the mantle. And then all of a sudden you had a Captain America that was more tactical
right.
in his approach to everything. Not just heroic, but tactical and heroic.
Okay.
And I would love to see that played into it. Not only that, but Falcon, as Captain America, is a little overpowered with the ability to fly and all this other stuff.
Right.
Bucky Barnes just has a metal arm that makes him super strong.
Speaking basically of Bucky, that post-credit scene, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was surprised when it wasn't Captain America in that post-credit scene.
Me neither. Like, we all thought that he was going to be in it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we all were hinted in a way.
I just didn't know Bucky was Jesus.
That's yes.
I was like, wait, he did this? It's like he's going to go find Moses. I knew it.
And on the seventh day, he
I
was
lost
in
my metal arm.
And risen in Wakanda.
But yeah, then, I wonder if he's going to have like a new like vibranium arm.
That's what's going to happen. Like the princess is totally going to hook him up with some like new tech, you know, vibranium tech. For Infinity Wars, I think that's what's going to, you know, go down.
He's going to have an arm like Clawhead in this movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Where it's just going to be able to, like, do the vibranium bombs
and Claw's
stuff like
that. Claw's arm is actually Wakanda tech, which is kind of interesting now that I think about it. They never explained where Claw's arm really derived from, did they?
No, they did.
Yeah, where because they kept asking where he got it from, and he said where he got it from.
He said it was vibranium-based, and it was from Wakanda, but who made it?
No, originally, when Ross was questioning him and going, so your arm, where'd you get that weapon? He went, that's not a weapon. That's mining equipment that I modified.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so he was serious. Okay, yeah, I thought he was just talking shit. Okay.
No, he was telling the truth of going, that was basically the line of going, you know, you think that's dangerous? That's not even considered a weapon to them.
Yeah.
That's mining equipment. That's a pickaxe for them.
Okay. Yeah.
That was a self-made weapon.
It wasn't like somebody gave it to him or something.
Yeah, it was he stole mining equipment and kind of turned it into a hand. So that's where like the blaster part of it came from and everything.
And, okay, that answers my question.
Yeah, that was to kind of show like how advanced their technology was, that the thing he was using to blast cars into oblivion, he was like, yeah, they use that as a pickaxe. Do you want to know what they use as an actual weapon?
Okay.
You should ask the guy behind the glass over there what he really has. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was more of like a lie that he was telling and to, you know, divert attention towards T'Challa. So that's why it kinda went over my head. Okay.
That makes sense now. That was him fully telling the truth as a way to try and get Ross to not trust T'Challa anymore.
Okay.
And pretty much going, yeah, he's been telling you that he can't do anything. You should ask him, where'd he get his suit from? Or what is his suit made from? You know, what kind of other stuff do they have? That? You want to know where I got it from? I got it from him. You know, it's from where he is, where it's not even considered a weapon. Wow. Go ahead. Keep asking him. You're asking me the wrong questions. You right. should be asking this guy.
You know, I want to see where Ross's character goes. I want to see if he becomes like, so he's already technically like a spy in a sense for the American government. I wonder if he's going to like somehow like screw over Black Panther in the next movie. Like, I don't think he will, but it could happen.
I saw something saying that he's going to pop up in more movies. So I'm guessing he's going to be like the Agent Coulson.
Yeah, because okay. isn't Agent Coulson like dead?
Technically.
Not according to the TV show.
No.
See, I still don't quite understand that. Like, so he's doing all this stuff under the name of S.H.I.E.L.D., but...
S.H.I.E.L.D.'s gone, and but he's supposed to be dead.
But the Avengers have no idea that he's still alive?
Yeah. Yeah.
How does that work?
That's pretty much going, maybe we know wants- not many people are watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so we can't reference that in the movies now.
Right.
But
maybe he wants to let them know that, or make them think that he's dead. Or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, but then there's tie-ins to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to all the movies that come out that first weekend in May. So eventually you would think maybe they would get wind of Agent Coulson doing something. I don't know.
It might come up in one of the Avengers movies.
Right.
But when it comes to Ross, though, you have to keep in mind, in Civil War, Black Panther caught Zemo and immediately gave him to Ross. Mm-hmm. So out of all the people like on the Avengers team, so to speak, Ross trusts T'Challa the most because T'Challa is the one that actually went, you can have this person. I know you've been looking for this person.
Right.
Here he is.
And now he fixed his back.
Yeah, then he saved his life and fixed his back. So
right.
It's
so
legit, you know.
I have a hard time believing that Ross is going to do like anything against T'Challa at all.
Or I want to know if he's going to do something in like a naive way, like say something he's not supposed to say.
I mean, they're starting to share their tech as seen at the end of the movie. So it's hard for him to be like,
you know what they have there?
Yeah. Because everybody else will be like, yeah, he's been showing us all month. What else is there?
He fixed my back, guys.
In a day.
Wait, so do you think he's the one that fixes Rhodey's back then?
Very possible. Because considering that he's already in the healing process at the end of Civil War, because he was starting to walk, kind of. And I can see him going to Wakanda and everything, especially considering he has that relationship with Captain America.
Right.
I can see him going... Yeah, you can heal this guy, and I know we had a battle back in the day, but heal him up, and we need him on the team.
Or maybe that's kind of a peace offering that Captain America offers to Iron Man
and Tony, to
kind of heal their relationship.
It might be.
Maybe.
If you watch the trailer for Infinity War, our War Machine's with the Wakandan people.
Yeah.
You know, he's in that group when they're about to go up against Thanos' minions.
Right.
So
I think in regards to the diversity with this film and what it brings to movies in general is that particularly this movie, I think it broadens the world of opportunity that it gives to the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. Like it's expanding its horizon. It's giving it to other user bases. It's giving it to other people internationally, something that they can appreciate and like. I don't think it's necessarily breaking barriers. You know what I mean? Like it's like something that's revolutionary. I mean, no movie's absolutely perfect, but there's some things that, you know, obviously I didn't like about it. Like there are a couple CGI scenes, especially when they're on the waterfall. The people on the waterfall felt a little, you know, cut and paste. Into the crowd, there was a blatant Toyota / Lexus car chase scene. It was just like product placement like no other.
Right.
But that's how I feel. I mean, you know how I feel strongly about diversity in film and things like that, Brett, and I pretty much bring it up in every episode.
I was expecting you to kind of have the opposite effect on this one and go, you know what? There wasn't enough diversity in this movie still. It was just...
Here's the thing. I'm... you guys got a Black Panther. I'm waiting for like my Brown Tiger. Okay. Like, where's my guy? You know what I mean? Like
Captain Marvel? The yeah. second one? Maybe?
I don't know. I'm waiting to see more like South Asian prevalence in comic books and superheroes in general. I know that there's like, you know, Bollywood, mm-hmm. but they don't right. They don't construct their heroes that well, and plus they're like any other company in Hollywood. They're all about money and right. revenue. So nobody wants to go through the sophistication of screenplays and advanced character building to kind of create a film or a franchise that'll do mm-hmm. that. They just want to kind of make a shortcut there, you know?
Well, here's the thing, though. A lot of people said that about a black superhero. Like, you can't make money with a black superero. It's not going to work.
Yeah, look at Meteor Man, Blank Man, all
exactly.
that.
Yeah, all black cast, black director. It'll never work. Well, it's working. So I feel like this movie now opens the door for an Asian character, an Indian character, mm-hmm. and, you know, a Mexican character. It opens the doors now because now they're saying, okay, if they work with black people, what other markets can we tap into? What other superheroes can we find that we can, you know, put on our screen to basically draw them in too? So yeah. I think this definitely opens the door for that because it proved it wrong.
Yeah. On the point where you were talking about like the black superheroes that like we really don't get too much of, side bit, the one that I'm excited for is Black Dynamite. We're getting another Black Dynamite movie this year.
That's right.
Yes, we are. Yeah, so like speaking of like will it sell, enough people wanted Black Dynamite back after his first movie and also and the animated cartoon. Series that we're getting a second one.
Exactly.
So that's what I'm like stuck on. Like,
I mean, granted, Black Dynamite is one of the greatest movies.
It is. It came out in 2009.
Yeah.
So it was a while ago.
That's yeah. about right.
Yeah. And then the animated series came out, I want to say, like 2013 to 2014.
I didn't know there was an animated
series.
It's
so good.
It's like two or three seasons?
Yeah, it's like three seasons.
I had to look that up.
It's animated by the same people who did the Boondocks. So same fight scenes, everything.
On Adult Swim.
Well, I'm looking that up tonight.
And it's voiced by Michael J. Wright.
So basically the whole cast. You know, not Cornbread. Mm-hmm. Was it Cornbread?
No, Chitlins. No, I don't know.
The guy with the curlers in his head.
I can't remember. Man. Like
Cream Corn. That's his name.
Okay.
Cream Corn. Bullhorn is in it. Honeybee is in it.
So, I like the mystical hobo because like, like because in the movie he's not as mystical. You just see him kind of like throw down a poof of dust and he's gone. But, like in this one, he's actually magic. Like he can actually teleport. He can do whatever he wants. But nobody ever knows how he does it because he can't fund it. But he just does what he's doing. So yeah, no, like, when I heard about like obviously Black Dynamite, like it's just a nod really to just black exploitation in general. Like that right. was just mm-hmm. cool black characters in the 70s. Let's make them cool. Let's make them not drug lords and like thugs. It made it really cool. With this, like when I got Black Panther, I was like, I'm actually happy that I got some form of like actual black movie where it's an empowering person, not just someone.
It's in a serious tone.
Yeah, in a very serious tone with a lot of like top billed actors and actresses that I would care for.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like my mom, she wanted me to go see Meteor Man cause she wanted me to see a black superhero. And I'm like, you know, yeah, but no.
See what movie passed.
I feel that in regards to the South Asian community, it's seriously an untapped market. There's mm-hmm. over a billion of us, guys. Over a billion of us, okay?
One of them has to be equivalent to Denzel.
Yeah. Somebody's got to look decent enough to become a superhero. I don't
know. Put Tony Jaa in a goddamn superhero film.
Yeah, I don't know what, but I need a character too. I have a dream. I have a dream that little brown boys and little brown girls can one day look up to a brown superhero and aspire to be, you know, one of them one day.
But now that they've seen, oh, there's money in this.
Yeah, like you're saying, yeah, I can see them saying, all right, this proves that, you know, this can happen elsewhere and it can make money as well. Let's try other things too.
Right.
You know, and I can see that happening, which mm-hmm. is cool.
Yeah, I actually have the numbers up here now for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. At number one for opening weekend is Marvel's Avengers at $207 million. Then in second place right now, Black Panther at $192 million, which already beat out Age of Ultron at $191 million. So Black Panther is already in the second spot for opening weekend, and if the projected 220 happens, it'll be the best opening weekend for a superhero movie of all time. I don't know if that counts for inflation, but
right. But yeah. Still,
that's impressive.
It is. And you got to realize what it was: Ultron and Civil War was number one, or Avengers number one, and then Ultron number two.
It was before. It was Avengers was number one, and Age of Ultron was number two at $207 million for Avengers, and then $191 million for Age of Ultron.
And those are team movies. This is a solo film.
That's
right, sandwiched right in between. Even if it doesn't pass, it's sandwiched right in between two team films, man.
Yeah, the next solo film is currently fifth place with Iron Man 3 at $174 million.
Right.
That's the next solo film after Black Panther.
And
right
that
now.
Clearly beat it out already.
Which that one had the hype of being the first movie after the Avengers as well. If you want to go down even further, the next one would be Spider-Man Homecoming at $117 million.
That's crazy.
For a solo opening. That's Spider-Man.
It annihilated Spider-Man.
I kind of liked how this movie kind of was.
It almost doubled Spider-Man.
Kind of Spider-Homecoming, like, kind of character build-up sense. It gave you an idea of, like, what the character was about, his origin, things like that. But it didn't delve too much into the detail. It gave him, an understanding of the city and its landscape around it. I just felt that it was a little bit similar in a way, how it built up the character.
Yeah, and we also got to see, like, the different, like, rituals to, you know, how they go about selecting Black Panther or who gets the powers of Black Panther. We got to see he actually gets stripped of the power, so he's fighting on equal terms with whoever wants to take that mantle.
Right. It actually answered a question that I had going into it. Because what I was wondering was, in Civil War, was T'Challa already the Black Panther, or was T'Chaka still the Black Panther? And I guess you got to kind of assume that T'Challa was the Black Panther at that point. I guess T'Chaka had gotten too old to, you know, be out there, you know, fighting and whatnot. So he let his son become the Black Panther early while he still reigned as king and while his son was, you know, learning how to be king. So that answered the question I had going into the film.
See, I saw it more as after T'Chaka died, T'Challa just went back home immediately. It was like, give me the fruit to become Black Panther. I'm going to murder the person that murdered my father.
You think so?
Because if you watch Civil War, there is a gap of time between when his father dies and when the car scene chase that he first appears happens.
Okay.
Because Winter Soldier was still hiding in an apartment for a while, and then they were searching for him, thinking he did it. And then it was after he got had to start running and everything, that's when Black Panther comes in the suit and everything.
So you're saying from a timeline perspective, it overlaps a tiny bit.
The possibility that he went back and just – because in that movie, he was purely revenge-based. It could be in his mindset to go, I don't care about the ritual right now. I'm going to get revenge on my father. And you see that a little bit in this one where when Claw first appears – he's not going, oh, yeah, we should monitor him and see what he does. It's, I'm going to find him, kill him, and get revenge for Wakanda for what he's done.
Okay.
And I think that falls in line with that was his character at that point, and then you saw his character grow beyond that where he was like, I can't do this in front of people, and then letting Claw get away, and then everything that led up to where the movie ended up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I saw that more as that's probably what happened during Civil War, is he just was – he needed the power to get revenge.
I still have more questions then. That means there need to be a Black Panther 2 then.
For sure.
But one thing I – my girlfriend would definitely kick my ass if I don't bring this up. The powerful image of black women in this film, and we kind of touched on it with Okoye and the Dora Milaje, Nakia – as well, and T'Challa's mother, man. Black women really look powerful in this film. They were the backbone of Wakanda, and T'Challa wouldn't be the king that he is if it wasn't for the women that he had around him. So more power to the black women in this film, too.
I mean, out of the five main people in Wakanda that are prevalent in this movie, three of them are women.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know.
It was so great to see a movie where the side characters were just as important as the main character in the outcome of the film, in the plot.
Yeah, at points it seemed like the Black Panther was kind of like a in the background at some points of the film.
Yes.
Like, my favorite was, it was almost like a James Bond type, like, scene when they're in that underground, like, South Korean gambling dungeon casino thing that they got going on. And, you know, they had the, you know, the comms in their ears and they're just, like, walking around, like, you know, kind of like Ocean's 11 or something going on. It was pretty cool, you know? Mm-hmm. And they all worked together so well and their personalities were so great. It's just, and they were like joking, you know, with each other, like, don't freeze when you look at her, you know?
Did he freeze?
Yeah.
Like an antelope in the headlights.
Yeah. Not only that, but you could, personality wise, you can easily describe each of those characters.
Yeah.
You're not just, for most movies, when it comes to those kind of roles, you're going, oh, it's the person that had this kind of armor on and did this. Personality-wise, you can easily hit every single one of those people and describe them accurately.
Right.
Like, even his sister, you know, she was somebody that was so interested in the outside world, but fully capable of creating the technology inside. Like, she was the one that knew about things in the outside world, like the "what are those" joke and stuff like that. That
I thought she stole the show, man. I thought she stole the movie.
That was great.
Yeah.
I think one of my favorite lines from her is when, like, Ross woke up and she's like, she's like, oh, you can't scare me like that, colonist or colonizer. And I was like, oh, yeah, yes.
I think that's just the new noun that everyone's going to use now is colonizer.
It was pretty good. Like, it made the humor of what was going on in the world. It was really good.
My favorite was still the sneakers dad joke.
Oh, so good. It's like, I made shoes that dampen all of your sounds and you can't make any noise with it. I like to call them sneakers.
Wait, I like before Ross even woke up, he's like, oh, another broken white boy for me to fix. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, she definitely had a lot of personality to her character, and it was great. Mm-hmm. But alas, we are running out of time here at the breakfast table. But as always, you can catch us online at facebook.com, twitter.com, and we are on iTunes and Google Play at the moment to catch all our backlogs of episodes. I do want to thank our guest, Devin, for joining us one more time. Did you want to plug your show real quick?
Sure, why not? Check us out right here on the Podcast Detroit Network. It's Knockouts and Three Counts. We talk wrestling and MMA, so come check us out. We broadcast live Tuesdays at 9 p.m.
Awesome. Until next time, this has been The Breakfast Table.